37. This Psalm of David, in the first verse, tells us what the point of the whole psalm is. It says, "Fret not," or "don't worry yourself," or "don't be anxious. Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity." This remains largely the topic of this psalm. And we read that, and we kind of, those of us who've been in church a long time, read that it says, "Fret not thyself, neither be envious." And we know that we shouldn't be envious, and we know that we shouldn't fret. And so we kind of look at those as commands, and they are commands. But when we look at them as commands, that's kind of a cold way of looking at it. It's kind of a way of looking at it without feeling. And if we think about it for a little bit, why does God tell us to not fret and not be envious? Think about fretting and think about being envious for a moment. If you're fretful or you're envious and you're there all by yourself, perhaps you're in your room or at your kitchen table and you're fretful and you're envious, that doesn't affect your neighbor in any way. It doesn't really affect God in any way. In fact, the only person who's affected by that, who's made miserable by fear and envy, is you. It simply harms you. And so these things are here for our sake, not just because they're commands. I mean, that's kind of a cold religionist's way of looking at that verse, but think of it more as a friend or as a parent or as a loved one saying, "Don't worry," because that's really the tone of it. The tone is God as a friend and as a father saying, "Do not worry," because it harms you. It's not harming God at all. It is just taking the joy out of your life. God will continue on today just the same as He always has, and it's no sweat off of His back if you're envious or fretful. It's just yours. And God is looking out for your well-being here in these verses. And He lists these two things, being fretful or envious. "Fret not thyself, neither be envious against the workers of iniquity." Just the stating of this, just the necessity of saying this, goes without saying that it seems like to the psalmist, and it seems like to us, that there's a temporary imbalance of justice in the world. That's what the tone of this verse, it goes without saying that it is already understood that the believer has a problem in perceiving there to be an imbalance in the world, that there's an injustice in the world, that the wicked have it better. That's assumed already in this psalm, that the believer already feels that way, and many do. And we feel that way at different times in our life. There's times that we may feel like, "I've done this and I've done this and I've followed the Lord and I've done what He's asked and I'm not getting anywhere." And then I look at the world and why are they so successful? Why do they prosper when they do wrong? Why do other Christians seem to prosper when they do wrong? Why is it this way and yet I have done it this way and it doesn't seem to work for me? I'm not getting anywhere. And this psalm is addressing this. He's saying, don't be envious. Don't be fretful. Just because there seems to be a temporary imbalance of the way things should be. In fact, really, that's the way the world always is. There will always seem to be an imbalance of evil prevailing until the reign of Christ comes to this earth. And so he is telling them not to be fretful or envious. And then he says in verse 2, "For they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb." In other words, it is a temporary imbalance. It's a mirage. It's not real. It's not a long-lasting imbalance. It's just a snapshot in time. It's not the way that it will be or that it will turn out. It just, right now, it seems that way. You know, in business, sometimes it seems like people who are willing to be meaner, more aggressive, do a few things unethical, get further ahead. You know, in my business, it's the people that push the limits of insurance billing, of what they really should be billing the insurance for, that seem to get ahead. And you think, well, I'm not getting ahead, and it's because I'm doing the right thing. And it's that way in a lot of areas. Seem that way at college sometimes, that the people with the crib notes and the people with different things like that got further ahead. And he goes on and he makes several statements, affirmative statements. Verse number 3, he says, "Trust in the Lord and do good, so shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed." He addresses individual fears, just our mere existence, our life, our eating. We worry about that. Well, are we going to make it financially? Are we going to make it far enough into retirement financially? He addresses this. He says, you will. You will. Don't worry about that. You will. And as we mentioned as we began this, looking at verse number 1, he was saying these things because these are the things that take away our joy. And he's telling us to just change the way we think about each day and we'll have joy. And we'll look at that a little bit further on. Verse number 4. "Delight thyself in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart." Not always necessarily what we covet. You know, we covet a lot of things that will not give us the desire of our heart. There's a difference. What is the desire of our heart? Many of us really don't know what that is. Many of us have not thought long enough to really know what the desires of our heart are. There's a whole bunch of desires of our flesh that we think will bring the desires of our heart, but they don't. What are the desires of our heart? You need to spend some time and think about that. What is it that you want in life? What is the desire of your heart? Well, it's sound relationships. You know, we, speaking as a man, many times we have a fear of financial failure. Why is that? Is it because no one will help us and no one will feed us? No, it's because of our pride and we don't want to have to depend on anyone else. So at the root of our fear of being a failure is our desire to have friends. It truly is. We're afraid that our relationships will be harmed if we're a pathetic failure. So you may have the career goal and the fleshly desire to be very successful, but the desire of your heart is true relationships. But it's so funny, the path that Satan leads us down and the world leads us down many times in our pursuit of success to keep relationships intact, we abandon relationships on that pursuit. And so he's saying, if you trust me, I will give you the desires of your heart. Many of us don't even really know what those desires are. Some very basic desires to survive and to have enough and to have relationships and we think that we find those things through many other means. But he says in these passages, I am the giver of those things. Solid relationships. I have several friends going through divorces right now. All friends I grew up with, some of them I was in their weddings and things. Several of them, I believe, are lost. And I don't know how to counsel them outside the Word of God, they outside of understanding what a real relationship is. They don't really know what their desire truly is. But what are the desires of our heart? God says, I will grant those. Sound relationships. What about just a general sense of security? That's what we want out of a lot of things. That's what we want out of our savings account. That's what we want out of a well-built house. That's what we want out of a well-maintained car, a certain sense of security. They can't always deliver that. But God says, I will deliver that. I will give you the desires of your heart. I won't necessarily give you everything you covet or everything you think will give you the desires of your heart. But I will give you the desires of your heart. I'll give you sound relationships. I'll give you security. I'll give you those things. Those are the things that are at the core of our daily fears. Well, what if we lose the house? Well, what if I'm a failure? What if I'm not a good mom? What if I'm this? What if I'm that? The desires, the things that are at the core of those fears, God is able to grant those things. And many times I've mentioned before, we don't even really know what those are. We look at the surface things that we're working towards, trying to get those things. And our emotions rise and fall with our success in those arenas, whether or not we're successful in our career. We have separated that in our mind from whether or not we have enough. We should just be, the Bible tells us to be content with what we have. In other words, not stress about and allow our emotions to rise and fall with daily successes and failures. But getting back to this passage, he says, you will live and eat, you will find your desires, verse 4. Verse 5, commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. What's our way? Our direction? Our goals? Commit yourself to him, and he will make those levels come to pass. He will do those things. Verse number 11, but the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. That's another thing we crave. Maybe we don't realize that we crave it. When life is hectic, when our days are hectic and noisy and difficult and trying, we want peace. God is the source of peace. He's called the God of peace. Do you have peace in your life? Ask yourself that. Do I have peace? When you get home in the evening, can you pour yourself a glass of tea or whatever you drink and have peace? Or in the evening, are you still rubbing your forehead, fretting, anxious, pacing, breathing shallow? Do those things still abide with you? Signs that you don't have peace. Not being able to sleep, crying at night. God is the source of peace. Looking now, we've highlighted some of the things that God can give, which are really the things that we fret over. They're the things that we envy in other people. We assume that the world has these things. The truth is, they don't. The world has no peace. The world does not really have the desires of their heart. Looks like it. It really looks like it. But you don't know what's in their heart. You don't know the misery they may carry with them on a daily basis. You don't know what their relationships are really like. How much anxiety they go to bed with at night. You just see how long their boat is. That's all you see. You have no idea the misery that rides around in that boat. The family life that doesn't exist. Whatever it may be. We have no idea. We make assumptions, but we just don't know. So we've listed some of these things, these desires that we're tempted to think that the world has. We're tempted to think that there's an imbalance. For some reason, we don't have them and the world has them. Well, I got news for you. You've got a lot, if you're a child of God, you've got a lot more of these things than the world does. You may not realize it. You know, it was one thing that shocked me. Some people said I lived a sheltered life, and I'm glad for that. But one thing that shocked me many times as I grew up and I started to do things with other people, started to go into other people's homes, the lack of peace, the unrest that's out there in people's lives that seem just as normal as you and I. So we've listed all of these things, a number of these things. But notice how you get them. Let's back up and look at those verses again. There's several commands given here, five commands given, and some of them are repeated all the way through this psalm. The first one is in verse 3. He says, trust, and all of these are in the Lord. Every one of these is in the Lord. The first one is trust, in verse 3, in the Lord. And verily thou shalt be fed. You know, if you're a child of God, pretty much you're going to be fed either way. You can be fed and be miserable, envious, and fretful the whole time. Or you can be fed trusting in the Lord. You're going to be fed. You might as well enjoy it. That's what the heart of this psalm is. You're going to be fed. How do we take joy out of days that are fine? Fretting and being envious. Those things rob the joy out of a day that would be perfectly sunny and fine. But we're worrying about something that hasn't happened or may not happen. I do this. I am guilty. There's times I realize I am ruining a perfectly good day just because I'm worried. Why do we do this? But we do. Trust in the Lord. And verily, or steadily, or surely thou shalt be fed. And these things are somewhat progressive that we will, not progressive in the political way, they build on each other. They're progressive. Verse 4, delight thyself also in the Lord. There's one thing to have faith. Okay, Lord, I know that you've said you'll do this, and I believe you will. There's a whole new level of living when you delight in the Lord. Lord, I just really like walking with you. Lord, I really like trusting in you. This is a good program. I like how you do this. Enjoying life as a Christian. You know, we bought a house and the carpets are about as old as the last remodel of the house, which is about 50-some years, and cutting all of that out of there for the sake of our allergies and our lungs and everything else. And then I'm looking at these bare plywood floors. Some of them are plank floors and things, and I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to do for the next 6-8 months till we can afford to do something, you know? And I took a trip to Home Depot, and while I'm driving there, I'm just kind of praying under my breath, Lord, to help me to find a deal on some rugs or something. And I walked in, and as soon as I walked in the door, the lady was wheeling piles of carpet into the middle aisles, printing off stickers and throwing them on there with ridiculously low prices. And I just said, thank you, Lord. And I remember what Pastor always says about, you go in the store, you find something on sale that was just what you're looking for, that's the Lord. And I thanked the Lord, and that was a blessing to find some carpet for about 5 rooms of our house for less than $200. And that was a blessing. And I find delight in that. That's delightful walking with the Lord when you're not just trusting because you have to, but then you just find joy in it. It's enjoyable. Delight in the Lord. And he shall give thee the desire of thine heart. Verse number 5. The next a command. Commit thy way unto the Lord. That's a whole new level of faith there. Again, these things are getting deeper and deeper. Commit thy way unto the Lord. In other words, let go. Let go. That's hard. Let go. There's a phrase that people say, let go and let God. But letting go. Lord, you've got my way. Notice, and he shall bring it to pass. Faith is not, I believe God can. Faith is, I believe God will. There's a difference. And it says here in this verse, he will. Commit your way into the Lord, and he shall. He shall. He will bring it to pass. He'll do it. The next one goes even deeper. Verse 7. Rest. And again, all these are in the Lord. Rest. You can let go and not rest. I give my kids more and more slack. Not very much. But, you know, there was a day when I started letting my son take the pellet gun out in the woods by himself if all the kids were in the house. You know, and I'd make him go with the walkie-talkie and check in, and, you know. There's a difference between letting go and letting go and resting. I let him go, but I didn't rest. You know, I just waited till he came back. Okay, is your gun unloaded? Okay, is it in the cabinet? Is the cabinet locked? You know. Resting is a whole nother level. I mean, that's a level that believers seldom ever find. You know, I might just barely muster up enough to trust the Lord. But I'm telling you, I'm not sleeping in the bottom of the boat during the storm. I'm awake. Rest in the Lord. Notice the next one, still in verse number 7, and wait. Wait patiently for him. The idea of wait, it's an interesting thought. I've preached on it a number of times. You realize you can't have faith without waiting. It's not possible. Those are two inseparable things. Faith means there's a period of time that it doesn't look good and I can't see the answer. And I'm going to endure that period of time until God comes. That's what it is. That's what faith is. It's, I believe God is going to do something. And so, though I can't see anything, I'm going to wait that period of time until God does what he says he's going to do. Right now it looks ugly. Right now it doesn't look good. But I believe there's a day that God is going to do something. And so I will wait. If it's instant, it's not faith. There's time with faith. And in that time is when many of us lose faith. And we scheme and we plan and we work out our own way. I don't know how long that time is. For different circumstances, it's different things. Sometimes for a financial circumstance, it's weeks or months. Sometimes in relationships, in other circumstances, it could be years and decades. It could be years that we wait for the Lord to do something. But faith is saying, I'm going to wait. I'm going to stay here in this place until God does what he's going to do. I've read his word, and I know it says that he's going to do this, so it must be that he's going to do it. And as we walk that load, increment of time by time by time, it gets hard, and we start to think, well, I guess God doesn't do that. Yeah, he does. In his time. In his time. Many have made the mistake of saying, well, the promises of God don't seem to work, because I've tried. There's still time. There's still time. Wait. You know, what is the alternative to waiting? The alternative to waiting is working without God. It's working without the tools. You know, you ever try to do a project without tools? There's nothing more frustrating than that. You know, I took a van load and a trailer load of things down to the new house this week, and the first things I put on that was all of my necessary tools. I was not going to get down there and not have tools. And duplicates and multiples, and to make sure I had tools to do the things that we needed to do. It is nothing more frustrating than doing something without tools. That's what it is to not wait in the Lord. You don't have the tools. You're expending far more effort than if you were to wait upon the Lord. So he lists these five things that we are to do. We're to trust. We're to delight. We're to commit. We're to rest. We're to wait. And then he also lists three things that we are not to do. There's some things we're to not do. We've already been told in verse number 1 to not fret. The minute you start to see that seed starting to grow in your mind, the seed of fret, you've got to uproot it. And you'll be pulling those weeds like crazy because they're popping up all over. Fretting. Envy. For me, envy seems to be, most of the time, easier to root out. You may be different. Though there have been times that, you know, sometimes it feels like when you pastor and work a job, and sometimes you think, man, the rest of the world's got it easy. I'm working 7 days a week. Sometimes you can get to envying other people's conditions and lives. And he's already proved that that's ignorant thinking. You don't know what's there. Be content with your life. So we've been told not to fret, not to envy. Notice in verse number 8, he says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. You can sit just like you can be fretful and envious. You can sit at your house and be angry at somebody all day long. Who's miserable? You are. These things are written for you. God's saying, I've got this. I will take care of the evildoers. I will sort this all out. You just have to wait. Notice verse 9. For evildoers shall be cut off. That verse, I've lived long enough that verse scares me. To a place that I feel bad. There have been people who have wronged me. Not because I'm special, just because I'm a child of God. There have been people that have wronged me more than I can remember that are dead. Evildoers shall be cut off. But those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. I've often told the story of riding my bicycle through Cadillac and for no reason at all had a punk kid yell a bunch of profanity at me. I was on the sidewalk. I wasn't in his way. I don't know why he wanted to yell a bunch of profanity at me. And I didn't think much of it. I just rode my bike home. He's a kid, just being a lost kid. That's what he is, a lost kid. I forgot about it. Went to the grocery store that night in my car, and lo and behold, that kid parked next to me. And I didn't think much about it, but part of me thought, well, you know, I'm not on a bicycle now, kid. Come here. But I didn't say that. Well, I got my groceries, and I'm coming back out to my car just as he leaves the Myers parking lot. And he's got a fast car. It's pretty souped up, nice car. And he decides to go through the light poles like they're a chicane. And he's going about 65, 70 miles an hour through the Meyer parking lot. Loses control, drives his lowered car over the curb, totals the car, sends the airbags off and everything else. And I thought, I think I'll stay around and give my police report. So I did, and the police thanked me. And I again, didn't think much of it, went on my way. A few days later, I had a problem with my car, and I needed a new intake and new parts, and lo and behold, that car had the same motor. And I was there at the scrapyard, and I said, this is what I need, this, 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 and this. And he goes, well, I'm about to take it off of that car right there. And I turned and looked at the car that was on the hoist, and I just started laughing. And I told the guys the story. I said, you won't believe this. And I needed the parts off of that car, and I got a good deal on them. And me and the service man laughed quite a while about that. And notice verse 9, it says, evildoers shall soon be cut off, but those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. They will inherit that portion that that person had. That's exactly what happened to me that day. God took it from them and handed it to me. He does this sort of thing. This is what he does. And so this passage of Scripture is saying, stop living a miserable, fretful, and envious life. In just a little while, he's saying, I'm going to take care of this. Just wait. You're making yourself miserable for no reason. You know, we can see our kids doing this. You know, but God can see us doing it. Sometimes our kids are making themselves miserable over nothing. You know, maybe something at dinner that they don't think they're going to like. Well, you're making yourself miserable over nothing. Just try it. Or making themselves miserable over a trip to the dentist or whatever, and all without a cause. And God looks down at us the same way, and we're making ourselves miserable, and he's just trying to explain to us, settle down. Stop worrying. Verse 10, for yet a little while, again, we mentioned in the beginning that this is a temporary imbalance of justice that we perceive. It's not the way it actually is. Just in a little bit, in just a little bit, the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. You ever done that? Hey, I wonder whatever happened to so-and-so. Try to find out where they went. You know, maybe it was an old boss that treated you bad or something like that. They're gone. Thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plotteth against the just, and gnasheth upon him with his teeth, for a period of time. But the Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. God sees that that person's day is coming. The problem is we don't. We don't see a week, a month, a year, 2 years down the road. God does. The wicked have drawn out the sword, bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy, and to slay such as be of upright conversation. But instead their sword shall enter into their own heart, their bows shall be broken. A little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. That goes back to what are the desires of your heart? You may not have a long boat, a nice yard, but what you do have, I guarantee you, is better than many wicked. It's better. You've got more joy. You've got more peace if you allow yourself to have joy and peace. If you don't keep fretting, and again, we ruin perfectly good days. The arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. Notice that ETH on many of these things. In other words, that means that's just what God does. That's what he is in the regular business of doing. He's in the regular business of upholding the righteous, upholding the needy. And there's a lot of blessed promises through this passage. We can't look at them all. But if you take those first principles that we've looked at, and then read this passage. Read it with the understanding that it's God trying to tell you to relax and enjoy where you're at. Relax. It's not so bad. A lot of what is making us miserable is a smoke that we've drummed up and worked up. And it's making us miserable for no reason. Verse 23. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. God's got a plan. That's what that's saying. God's got a plan, and he's happy about it. It's not that he's got a plan for you, and he's just kind of, I guess that's what they deserve. No, he's got a plan, and it's good, and he likes it. Verse 24, though he fall. Though there's those times in which we have to wait. Though there's those days. Though there's the temporary imbalance of justice that we see. Though there's that. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down. Notice that phrase, utterly cast down. That goes back to the core of our desires again, right? What is our fear? That will be an utter failure. That we'll be utterly lonely, that we'll lose our closest friends in the process, we'll be utterly cast down, we won't be able to get back up, we'll completely lose our mind, we will completely lose it all. No. Will you fall? Will you stumble? Will you have bad days? Will you have a nervous breakdown? Maybe. Will you stay there? No. No. But look at the world. They stay there. They stay there. You don't stay there. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. Notice that ETH again. Upholdeth. That's just what he regularly does. That's his regular way. The regular way of God is delivering. That's his regular way. We need to understand that that's his regular business, is putting things back together. It's not just something that he can do occasionally in a rare circumstance. If you meet all the applications, if you fill out this form, you know, it's not like a USDA loan. It's a lot easier to get. In fact, it's just what he does. He's saying that God is a person that just regularly helps his people. Just regularly does it. That's what that ETH means. Upholdeth him with his hand. Notice verse 25. I have been young, and now am old. Yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. David said, I'm an old man. As far as I can remember, I've never seen this happen. I've never seen the righteous utterly forsaken. Will you have to borrow bread sometime? Maybe. God has blessed us as his people. You know, the world has problems, and people lose their houses, and it amazes me that they have no one that they can turn to get on their feet again. That's the problem. That's homelessness in America. Homelessness in America has one root, and that's the breakdown of biblical values and not having a support unit. They have none. How can you be homeless if you have a support unit? Child of God, you will never be homeless. You may not own a home, but I have never known a child of God to have to sleep under a bridge. Some may choose to because of pride. Maybe they won't get right and won't patch up some of their relationships, won't repent. You may choose to, but you have a support group. You know, this was something I had trouble getting through the head of the people at the hospital. I have a support group. Well, yeah, but you don't really have much money, your job's not really that stable. And I'm like, but you don't understand. I have a support group. Nobody's going to let me starve. Not because I'm special, just because I'm a part of them. They're not going to let me starve. They're not going to let my family starve. Nobody's going to let you starve. God's not going to let you starve. You know, we have been blessed in that we have a network that the world doesn't have. We take it for granted. And we may not always get along the way we should. But when push comes to shove, God's people are there. And this is David saying, I've been young and old. Now I'm old. I have never seen this happen to the righteous. It happens to the world every day. It's so sad. I've picked up homeless young men. I've tried to buy them plane tickets, train tickets, bus tickets. There's nowhere to send them. They don't have a family. Yeah, Mom, she had me, you know, when I was when she was with that guy, and he's no longer around. I don't even know who he is, and Mom, she's a mess. She's addicted to this and that, and I've never met my grandparents, and I met a cousin once. Well, do you know his name? And there's nowhere to take them. People are homeless in our country. But David says, I've never seen this with God's people. What a blessing. He is ever merciful. It never stops to the believer. He is ever merciful and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. There's so many things in here that there's not time to look at. Verse 34, wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. I have seen the wicked in great power, spreading himself like a green bay tree, yet he passed away. That's the story of every person in Hollywood. Millionaires, billionaires, how many of them died in misery? Yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. I sought him, but he could not be found. Mark the perfect man, behold the upright. You're going to live a long enough life. Why don't you just take a few people that you believe are faithful, mark them down in your brain, and see what happens to them throughout their life. I come from what I believe a very blessed family. All my aunts and uncles on my father's side attend some form of church, claim salvation, are all still married to the first woman they met. And I attribute that to the Lord, but the prayers of my grandfather every day on his knees with my grandmother. And I think of the blessings that have been on our family through that. Put a mark on some people like that you think are outstanding. See how their life goes. Sometimes I think, Lord, if the end of my life could be like the end of my grandfather's life, that'd be good. That'd be good. Good enough. I don't need anything else. Look at some people like that. Put a mark on them in your mind. See where they are in 20 years. Take some of the wicked. Put a mark on them. See where they are in 20 years. 10 years. The Lord is telling us these things for our own happiness. That's it. You know, it's going to come out the same way anyway. God's going to be faithful to his promise. He's going to take care of you. The only difference is you're going to just choose to be miserable in the meantime. Right. Choose to work without him. Choose to not rest. Choose to not commit your way to him. Choose to fret, be envious, be angry, and you're the only one that's miserable in the situation. And we do that. I do that over and over again. I take a perfectly good day and I ruin it. We have to move on for the sake of time. Verse 39, the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble, and the Lord shall help them. Again, faith is believing not that God can, but that God will. God shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. A lot of good things in this passage. It's one that I regularly enjoy to read, but it's a lot harder to put into practice. It's hard to commit your way. It's hard to rest. It's hard to wait. It's hard to wait that period of time. But what's the alternative? You're going to wait anyway. You might as well not be miserable. You might as well not fret. You might as well not be envious. You might as well look around and see how good the moment is. We ruin a lot of today's worrying about how bad tonight might be or tomorrow might be. Just enjoy today. Enjoy what God's given you. Walk with Him. Put it in His hands. Delight yourself in Him. We'll stop there. And Brother Tim, if you come, lead us in a song.